huge advantage. He leaps behind me and kicks my other leg out from under me. My head hits the floor and the world goes white. When I get my bearings, Nine has my arms pinned with his knees. The fight is over. And with it goes our chances for finding the guard out west. I'll get a healing stone, Nine says, slowly standing. With blurred vision, I watch him hold his side as he leaves the room. Bernie Kosar whimpers. This is bullshit, you know that? I yell after him. You can't just decide things like this. That guard in New Mexico could die on their own, and you don't even care! Nine's voice booms through the apartment. We're soldiers, Johnny, and soldiers die. We were sent here to train and fight, and some of us aren't going to make it. That's the nature of war! I slowly hop into the living room on my one good leg. I can see through the windows that the sun is setting. BK sits on the floor, in the last patch of light, looking at me. He begs us to sit down and talk and plan our next move with level heads. Nine walks in with a healing stone held to his ribs. He tosses it to me, and I immediately place it to my left knee. Through the pain, I feel the cartilage slowly reconnecting. It doesn't take long for it to do its thing, and soon the pain has disappeared completely. I plant a hand on the window frame and say, If we're not going to New Mexico, then let's deal with Cetricus Raw. Right now, you and me. Maybe if we take him out, the rest of the Moogs will die and we'll save two worlds. Nine sits down onto a leather couch and puts his feet up on the glass coffee table. He sighs and closes his eyes. Sorry, Johnny, but even if Cetricus Raw dies, the Moogs will still fight. Just like Pittacus Lore died, and we still fight. Stop looking for an easy out and face it. We're all going to fight until the last one is killed. I look out the window and gather the strength to say what I've wanted to ever since I read Henri's letter. Pittacus isn't dead. I'm Pittacus. What did you say? I turn to face him. I said, I'm Pittacus Lore. Nine leans back laughing so hard he nearly flips over the couch. You're Pittacus! Why on earth would you think you're Pittacus Lore? I feel it, I say. It's why Lorian hibernates. Pittacus lives on through me. Oh yeah? You know what? I think I can feel it too. He mocks, feeling his torso. He stands and marches over to me. But hey, if you are Pittacus, the strongest, wisest elder of Lorien, then I just kicked Pittacus's ass. I wonder what that makes me. Lucky, I say, regretting I said anything. Really? Sounds like somebody wants a rematch. Enough. Bernie Kosar says, no more fighting. Save your strength. I ignore him. Fine. A rematch it is, then. If you want to take me on again, then there's going to be a change of venue. And to make it even more interesting, Pittacus, I say we each get to use one item from our chests. Fine. I open my chest, reaching immediately for the 4-inch dagger. The handle vibrates the moment I touch it and quickly wraps itself around my fist. I see Moog ash still stuck in its grooves. The smell of it makes me hungry for another fight. Nine grabs the short silver staff with his right hand. Okay, that makes me nervous. I saw how he decimated all those Pikens in West Virginia with that thing. He waves his finger at me when he sees my dagger. I said, only one item. I have my dagger. That's it. And that's all I'll need. And what about your cute little bracelet? I forgot about it. It's probably the better choice for me, thank you. I toss the dagger back into my chest. Follow me, Nine says. Ignoring Bernie Kosar and his pleas to stop, I follow Nine through the apartment and into the elevator. Both of us silent. I assume the fight will be in the building's dark basement, among columns and cement walls, our powers hidden from the world. Instead, we ascend. The elevator doors open and Nine punches a keypad by the door in front of us, and it clicks open. We're on the roof of the John Hancock Center. No way, no freaking way. Too many people can see us up here, I say, shaking my head, turning back towards the door inside. Nine walks out onto the roof. Nobody can see us up here. That's what's so great about being at the top of one of the tallest buildings in the city. I don't want to look like I'm chickening out, so I follow, showing a lot more confidence than I feel. But I'm not prepared for the fierce wind that hits me hard, almost pushing me back into the doorway. Nine keeps walking, his black hair whipping around his head, seemingly impervious to the force of the wind. His white t-shirt balloons around his torso until he strips it off and lets it fly over the ledge. When he gets to the center of the roof, he snaps his wrist, expanding the silver staff at both ends until it's over 6 feet long and glowing red. He turns to me and curls his palm, beckoning me closer. Like a tightrope walker, I take a deep breath and put one foot in front of the other to walk towards him. We're in the giant shadow of the looming white spire at the far end of the roof, and just as I near him, Nine turns and runs towards it. I have no idea what he is about to do, so I stop walking to watch his next move. Without breaking stride, he sprints straight up the spire until he reaches the top. The spire is swaying in the wind, and I'm dizzy just looking at him, teetering up there. Nine pulls the red staff over his head, and before I can register what he is doing, he hurls it. The second it leaves his hand, Nine dives headfirst towards me, and I'm faced with dodging two flying objects at once. I just manage to roll away from the sharp staff as it nears me, and I watch as it plunges into a metal beam at an angle. I turn to deal with Nine's approach, and as he's about to tackle, I land a blow so hard, I send him flying across the roof. I reach over and yank Nine's red staff out of the metal beam. Henri never trained me with anything like it, but I twist it over my head and charge anyway. Nine stands and steals himself for my attack. I swing the staff across his body, but he parries it away with his wrist and immediately moves to kick my newly repaired knee. I pull my leg back so he misses, but he's able to get his hands on the staff. We both struggle to gain control of it, circling and kicking, dodging and blocking. He uses his telekinesis to float my feet off the ground. I start to resist, but then realize I can use it to my advantage with the strong wind up here. Carefully timing my moves with a hearty gust, I flip over the staff. In a fraction of a second, I'm behind Nine with the staff against his throat. "We should be on our way to New Mexico," I say, pulling us towards the door that leads back to the elevator. Nine headbutts me with the back of his skull, right into my nose, and I lose my grip on the staff. He grabs it as I stumble backwards and slam into an electrical box. "Is that you talking, Johnny? Or is it Pittacus?" he says mockingly as he swings the staff. My bracelet expands just in time to deflect his blow. The electrical box I'm next to has been sliced in half by his near miss. Sparks fly everywhere, including inside my open shield and onto me. When they bounce onto my shirt, I let the fire catch and spread. My shield shrinks, and Nine stares, stunned at the sight of me consumed by flames. He shakes the surprise off. "Why didn't you turn into a human fireball when we were on the same team?" he shouts. The fire around my body crackles and hums in the strong wind. I walk towards him. He may think this is all fun and games. I don't. "Are we done now?"
"Not quite,"
He smirks. I form a small ball of fire in my palm. I figure I'll make my lack of humor about the situation clear enough if I bowl the ball of fire at his legs. But he knocks it away with the end of the staff like a hockey player. I skip two more fireballs down the roof, each one faster than the last, but he uses his mind to push them to the side. The first one rolls off and ineffectually burns out. The other makes its way to the edge of a fan casing. The heat melts it away, and the high winds tip the whole cover off the enormous fan, leaving it exposed. I raise my hands over my head to create a fireball the size of a refrigerator, but as it grows, Nine charges at me with the staff over his shoulder. He plants one end of the staff in the ground and vaults himself feet first at my flaming chest. He screams in pain as the soles of his shoes connect with my burning body and I'm sent flying backwards. The world that has been reds and yellows is now grays and blues. On my final rotation, I realize I'm flying directly into the exposed fan. At the last possible moment, I spread my arms and legs out and catch myself, mere inches from its blades. The fan is powerful enough to nearly extinguish what's left of my dwindling fire before I dive off and roll away. "Trying to cool off?" Nine asks, hands on hips as if simply observing my technique. He's kicked off his half-melted shoes. "I'm just getting warmed up." I leap to my feet to ready myself to respond to his next move. Nine sprints to his left and I follow. He jumps over some pipes and onto the raised ledge. Again, I follow. We are now both inches from a 1,000-foot drop onto the street below. To my utter shock, Nine then steps off the ledge. I yell and lean over to grab him, but when I do, I don't see him sailing to his death. He's standing horizontal, on a window with his arms crossed, that same big smile on his face. I've leaned too far, trying to grab him, and I frantically wheel my arms to regain my balance. But I can't catch myself, and suddenly, I'm tipping further over the abyss. Nine sprints back up the side of the building and hits me with a powerful uppercut to my jaw. I'm knocked backwards, but I don't have the chance to land. Nine catches me by the neck, spins, and holds me over the ledge. "Now, number four, all you have to do to get me to set you down, all safe and sound, is say it." He holds the staff with his other hand over his head. "Say you're not Pittacus." I kick at him, but he holds me out just out of range. I end up swinging back and forth like a pendulum. "Say it." He repeats, his teeth gritted. I open my mouth but can't bring myself to deny what I feel with such certainty to be true. I believe I am Pittacus Lore. I believe I am the one who can and will end this war. "You want to go running to New Mexico to find our ship? You can't believe for even a second it might be a trap. Then you talk about taking on Cetricus Ra, but you can't even beat me in hand-to-hand combat. You are not him! You're not Pittacus! So let's stop the bull right now! Just say it, Four!" He tightens his grip on my throat. My vision blurs. I look up into the cloudless sky and it turns red, just like the night the Mogadorians invaded Lorien. I see flashes of the faces of Lorik who are slaughtered. Their screams ring in my ears. I see the explosions, the fire, all of the death. I see crawls with Lorik children in their teeth. The pain I feel for all of them at that moment is so overwhelming that I know I can withstand whatever is done to me now, including Nine crushing my neck. "Say it!"
"I can't," I manage to squeak out. "You've got to be delusional," he yells, squeezing harder.
Now I see the bombs falling on Lorien. I see the torn bodies of my people, my planet being destroyed. At the top of one mound of bodies, I see my dead father wearing his silver and blue suit. Nine shakes me violently, my feet swinging wildly.
"You're not Pittacus!" I close my eyes to escape the visions of carnage swimming in front of me, dreading whatever comes next. I can see Henri's letter in my mind.
When the 10 of you were born, Lorian recognized your strong hearts, your wills, your compassion, and in turn, she bestowed the 10 of you the roles you're all meant to assume. The roles of the original 10 elders. What this means is that in time, those of you left will grow to be far stronger than anything Lorian has ever seen before. Far stronger even than the original 10 elders, from whom you've received your inheritances. The Mogadorians know this, which is why they're hunting you so feverishly now.
Whatever it all means, I know 9 wouldn't actually kill me. Each member of the Guard is too important, Pittacus or not. More than anything, coming together and fighting as one, as the Guard we were born to be, is more important than any fight he and I might have. That's small comfort, given the fact that my body is still swinging when I feel the wind change slightly. The hand around my neck opens, and my stomach drops as I start to fall. Could I have been wrong? Instead, I feel my feet touch down in less than a second. I open my eyes and find myself back on the roof. 9 walks away, his head down. He snaps his wrist and the long red staff shrinks into a piece of silver. Over his shoulder, he yells, "Next time I drop you!"
This audiobook has been broken into multiple parts to make the download faster. You have reached the end of a part, but not the end of the complete audiobook. So please check your library for the next part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
Part of this audiobook.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.
This is Audible.
Harbor Audio presents The Rise of 9, Book 3 of the Lorian Legacies by Pittacus Lore. Performed by Neil Kaplan, Marisol Ramirez, and Devin Sorvery.
Chapter 19. I'm face down in scorching hot sand. It's in my mouth, up my nose. I can barely breathe. I know I should get up, try to roll over, but my bones ache too much. I squeeze my eyes shut, trying to block the pain all over my body. I finally muster the strength to rise, but when I place my hands down to push myself up, the sand burns them. I let myself fall back. "Marina?" I groan. She doesn't respond. I still can't open my eyes, but I listen carefully for any signs of life. All I hear is the wind and sand whipping against my body. I try to speak again, but can only muster a whisper. "Marina? Somebody help me. 8? Ella? Anyone?" I'm so confused I even call out for Creighton. As I wait and hope for a response, I'm hit with the memory of Creighton's dead body. I see it all happening again. Ella's tears. The Moog attack. Hooking my hand inside Marina's elbow and 8 saying, "Here we go." The sun is so hot above me my hair feels like a blanket of fire on my neck and shoulders. Finally, I manage to roll onto my back and to lift my arm and shield my eyes from the blinding light. Slowly, blinking, I open them a bit at a time. I don't see anyone. Just sand. I struggle to my feet and hear 8's voice echoing in my head. "I really hope this works. I've never tried to bring anyone else." Well, it looks like it didn't work. Or it worked, but not for me, for all of us together. Where did Ella and Marina end up? Are they together? Is 8 with them? Are we all in different corners of the world?